Oh, this isn't useful, but I'm doing it anyway.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are joined by our good friend Wendy Bowlesby. She's here to talk about Hamilton, which is not a new musical, but is now available on Disney Plus.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Molly Glover.
Hi.
Hi.
I was mid-sip.
And we are joined once again by a friend of our show. She's not giving away her shot. It's Wendy Bowlesby.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. That is you. And we are here today to talk about a show you may have heard of. It's called Hamilton.
What was that again?
Never heard.
It's called Hamilton.
Its name is Alexander Hamilton.
Thank you. It's a
the show's called Alexander Hamilton.
It's a musical. It's something the kids do. In which they sing words to tell the story.
It's technically an operatic musical because more of the very little spoken dialogue. Almost all of it is in the songs.
So yeah, there you go.
It's like 99%. It's sung through.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is great because if you listen to the soundtrack, it's an audiobook.
Right.
The entire show. So the show has been on Broadway. It debuted in what year? Help me out, Wendy. You're our expert.
2015
on Broadway. Yep.
And it pretty much has been gangbusters ever since.
It's been nonstop.
Yep. Nonstop.
And it just debuted on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. A few days ago for us. By the time this episode goes up, it will have been there for a couple of weeks. So, and it is not a film. It is a filmed version of the stage play.
Fuck yes!
Yeah, it sure seems like they are on stage with those cameras.
Well, you can hear the audience through a lot of it.
Well, the audience was very quiet.
Not in a disruptive way. No. They were less interactive than our audience when we saw Hamilton, actually.
I honestly get the feeling that they filmed, because they would have filmed it several nights, several possibles. I get the feeling they filmed it at least once without an audience whatsoever.
Mm. What I read, which I believe is accurate because it was on some official site somewhere. They filmed it over three nights, two nights they filmed in front of an audience. And then one day they filmed on Monday, which was typically their day off.
Sure.
So all the close-ups and everything like that were filmed on the Monday without an audience. And actually I'm sure that I've watched it fewer times than Wendy, but I have watched it twice so far.
Yeah. You keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Wendy. Sorry. I've watched it twice so far. And there was one of the times that I watched it, I was like, ooh, hey, in this shot, there are empty seats.
So, good catch.
It's really well edited, so you don't catch it until you've watched it a few times, but there were definitely times they were shooting.
Or if you're looking for it, yeah.
Yeah, there were definitely
times. That was 2016 is when the performances were when they recorded.
Well, because Jonathan Groff, who plays King George, had already left the show.
Yep.
And so Rory, who was actually playing King George, and he's the King George I saw when I got to see the show on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Rory graciously stepped out of the show for a couple of nights so that Jonathan Groff could step in so they could film the original King George.
Yeah, when did Rory O'Malley take over on Broadway? Because on Wikipedia, he's only listed as being the US tour. He's not listed as being the King George for on Broadway. It's just Jonathan Groff for Broadway.
That's so funny. Cause Rory was there when we saw it in June of 2016. And I think Jonathan Groff stepped out after like 9 months because of Mindhunter.
Which is great, by the way. Watch Mindhunter.
Yeah. Mindhunter is great. It doesn't look like there's going to be a third season. So that's bullshit. Yeah. Anyway, I guess we got to do an episode about Mindhunter, but whatever. This is Hamilton. Wendy,
yeah,
you've been like a Hamilton proselytizer since day one.
I am a ham stan.
Yeah, exactly. She is a ham stan. The Wendy's ham standing is why I'm a ham fan. Oh. It's why I'm part of the ham fam.
My favorite thing that has been happening lately. So back when it hit, my friends here in Austin, Luke and Tony and the Cargills, have really had to put up with me. Like whenever we'd get together, at some point I would start talking about Hamilton, whether they wanted to or not. And they were, you know, they joked and kidded. But I got this text from Tony, Luke's wife, on, you know, the day that it dropped. And I'm like, she's like, we're at intermission now. And Luke straight up looked at me and said, God damn it, Wendy was right.
Yeah. you can live on that for like a year, right?
Yeah, it nourishes the place where a soul would be.
Nourishes your... And he's like, am I right that you have this book, which is, of course, the Hamilton. He's like, I'm betting you have this book. And he sends me the Amazon link. And I'm like, yes, I do.
Uh-huh.
Would you want to borrow it? He's like, yeah.
Maybe. Wendy, you were such a fan that you did a like a Hamilton crossover costume that you made for Convergence, like the year it was kind of starting to hit it in popularity. Uh-huh. Would you describe your costume? Because it's magnificent.
Yeah.
My colonial warrior, my rebel. So it was the colonial clothing. So the breeches, the vest, the jacket, the cravat, the tri-corner hat, but it was X-Wing fighter colors. So it was orange and white with trim of red. And so
the revolution.
The revolution. I'm here looking for something to rebel against.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super then great.
The tricorn was white with the rebellion symbol on the sides.
It was super great.
I think the other thing that you know, to get your Hamill fan bona fides, is you actually did do a New York pilgrimage, did you not, to see, because the original cast, or at least Lin-Manuel, had announced that he was leaving the show, and you went to see the original cast before he left, didn't you?
We got
that's
to see
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
The week after it won all the Tonys. And it wasn't like when we decided to do it, we were like, yes, this is something we want to do. Yes, it's way more money. And no, we don't care. Mm-hmm. But we do want to see the original cast. So that means we need to hurry up and make this happen. And so we did it in June of 2016. And that was a whole psychological mind trip of like, we're going to spend thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Thousands of dollars. And I need to accept that I probably won't see the original cast. I'm going to miss at least one important person. And sure. That needs to be okay. And I need to accept that. So we flew out of Dallas, which is 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. We left at midnight so that we could drive to Dallas in the middle of the night to catch like a 6 a.m. flight to fly into New York, to take a car immediately to the theater so that we could see the ham, the noon show, mm-hmm. and try to get into the lottery, which we missed it by one person. We got there this much too late, but we did get to see the Ham for Ham show outside. Then we tooled around until showtime, and then we watched the show, and then we went back to the airport and sat around until our 6 a.m. flight the next day.
That's amazing.
So wait, you already had tickets. So why did you enter the lottery? Or why were you trying to get?
We could have seen the matinee.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Tim, okay. Let me ask you this, Tim. How many times did you ride Rise of the Resistance?
No, I just didn't understand there were two shows day.
All right.
That's all I was trying to. If I'd known there were two shows that day, I would not have even asked the question. I was like, if you already had tickets, why did you need more to the same show? Okay. So.
And the only person we didn't get was Jasmine Cephas Jones. Everybody else. And then I got Rory's autograph at the stage door, and I got the Bullets autograph.
Bullets autograph.
Yeah, so
did you have an understudy for Jasmine?
She was great.
Yeah. And she plays Peggy Schuyler and Maria Reynolds, for people who don't know.
Which, you know, Mariah. Important role, but when you talk about when you talk about original cast, that getting an understudy, that's about the best you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I was excited to see, because we saw just the touring cast. And mm-hmm. so I was excited to see it for sure. I think that, I was excited when it came out on Disney Plus to see it with Lin-Manuel Miranda, of course. But I was most excited to see David Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if there was any one person I was most excited to see in that role of a musical I've seen and listened to, it was him mm-hmm. as Thomas Jefferson more than anything else. Because when we saw the tour with the same choreo, the same staging, and everything.
Second U.S. tour, yeah.
The second U.S. tour, it was like, I can see it. Like, I can hear it on the album, and I can see the comedy in this and mm-hmm. the mockery of the actions, and I really want to see him
do this.
I often, because I've seen touring productions, and often I actually feel like touring productions are better in a lot of ways. Like, sometimes Broadway, famous Broadway voices, like, I love Lin-Manuel, like, with all my heart and soul. But let's be honest, he's not the greatest singer.
No,
like,
he's not.
Like, he's not. He, like, especially when you're singing with Leslie Odom Jr. Like, come the fuck on.
Like, Story of Tonight. Like, you can kind of hear, he's like, oh, you're making it work, buddy.
Yeah, and he's got a nice voice, but it's...
Yeah.
You know,
for me, it's his, he sings with personality. He sings with emotion. So whether or not he's got the best singing voice, I've seen plenty of Broadway shows where the singers had great voices and they were not really acting.
They were technically proficient.
They were technically proficient and I didn't feel anything.
I think
makes me feel.
I got to back up because we're talking about stuff, but I got to back up because you just skipped over Ham for Ham. And I have to assume that not all of our listeners know what that means. I feel like we need to go back and mention that quick before we get too far away from it.
If you are a Ham stan, mm-hmm. if you were Hamel obsessed, if you were Ham obsessed back during the Halcyon days of the last days of the Obama presidency. So what they would do, and they used to do it every matinee day, and then they cut it down to just, I think, Wednesdays, if mm-hmm. I remember right, because it literally was causing a traffic jam. They started it and then other theaters followed suit. And I think it's, speaking of accessibility of Broadway, the front two rows on the floor and they held those tickets. Mm. And mm-hmm. for matinee performances, they would have a lottery and anybody could just walk up. And if you were there at the right time, you could put your name in the lottery. And if you won, it was $10 because he's the $10 founding father.
Mm-hmm. So
$10 per ticket or one Hamilton to see mm-hmm. Hamilton.
Ham for Ham.
Ham for Ham. And so they were doing this lottery. And then because people were standing outside for hours waiting to get into the lottery, Lin-Manuel, being a truly generous soul, was like, well, we should give them something so that even if they don't win, it was worth their time. And so they started doing little like 5-minute presentation performances. And most of them are on YouTube and you can go down a severe rabbit hole, just clicking through all of them. And they're amazing. And after a while, they start inviting stars of other Broadway shows to come in and do something. Like some people just come in and sing a song they love. Some people come in and perform a song from their show. They had the three King Georges, which was Andrew Rannells and I'm blanking on his name and shit, because I can see his face and I feel like an asshole. And then, of course, Groff Sauce. The three of them did this.
Do you mean Brian D'Arcy James?
Thanks. Yes, Brian D'Arcy.
Yeah.
Who I adore. That's why I felt like an asshole, because I love him.
And he's going to listen to this podcast and be pissed.
Yeah.
But they did the Skylar sisters. Great.
And
one of them, which was amazing, is they wanted to highlight the work of their stage manager. So they did 10 dual commandments, but they gave the mic to the stage manager. So what you could hear was her calling all of the cute.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's fucking awesome.
That's amazing.
I want to see that. That's great.
Definitely want to see that.
Okay.
Yeah, they did a whole app too that had a bunch of trivia. So like you could just be like doing trivia and earning points that got you nothing. I mean, but it was like just, you know, part
fan
of that.
Points.
Yeah, fan points. And so like
that was how they ended up doing the lottery for the tour and stuff was using an app. That way people didn't have to wait the
Hamill
same way.
Fan points. All right. Yep. So skipping back ahead to we were talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda and his acting ability. And I saw the touring production as well, the same touring show I think that that Molly and Nick saw. Yep. Now, unlike y'all, I had not listened to the show ahead of time, and that was deliberate, because I really don't shake your head at me. Do not shake your head at me. Because
that's a choice. It's the wrong choice.
Because when it comes to musicals, I don't like them nearly as much until I see them staged.
Interesting.
Any show I've listened to, I do not like them enough as much until I can see how the music interacts with the performers and interacts with the staging. So yeah. I was like, I need to see this completely fresh. And yes, there is an issue with that because the words are so fast, you can't catch all of them. But I still caught enough.
I will say too, Tim, it's interesting because that kind of segues into what we were going to talk about here, because that's a very fortunate position to be able to be.
It is.
Because I grew up with money and my grandma would take us to see Broadway shows sometimes, but that was like maybe like a once every couple of years thing. And it was if she liked the show. I grew up listening exclusively. Mm-hmm. I my favorite musicals were Phantom of the Opera, Camelot, and Miss Saigon, unfortunately, for a long time. And I knew them by heart before I ever saw them staged.
You've really pinned yourself in a specific time.
Oh, I know.
If you were a fan of Miss Saigon, I know exactly how old you are.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was like my favorite thing. And I disavow it now, but my God, like it was, but so for real, like that was Phantom especially, like I didn't know what the fuck was going on most of the time listening to that soundtrack. And I think that a lot of people, that is how they experience Broadway.
Sure.
They experience Broadway by listening to it. And maybe if they get lucky, they make a bad movie out of it. Right.
Well,
very bad. Like
Kurt Russell will be there, or not Kurt Russell, Russell Crowe will be there to ruin it for you.
Right.
I think also with Hamilton, as far as listening to it in advance, if you don't listen to hip hop, if your ear isn't like used to hearing people
bars,
yeah, right, spit bars that fast, I don't think you're gonna pick it up the same way you would if you're someone that usually listens to sung music.
Sure,
even though there's plenty of singing in Hamilton, but I just don't think that a lot of people maybe have that part of their brain wired from
listening
to it.
You've got to process really fast.
Sure, and that's all fair, and I had to deal with that, and yet I don't regret seeing it the way I saw it.
Oh, of course not.
That works for you.
Yeah, it works for me.
Personally, I'm glad I did it the way I did it, because I knew that show cold, which meant I could revel in the choreography, which is so important to me, and revel in the staging and the lighting design, and then all of the discoveries of like, oh, you sing that. Oh, that's who says that. Oh, shit, that changes things. Or
you're looking at a box when you say that, a box full of letters. I get it.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Yeah.
Or holy shit, Burr smiles all the time. I mean, how did I not know that's what was happening? But God, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then when Hamilton chooses Jefferson, that moment just is like, oh, you cringe. I physically just go,
You don't feel that in the song the way you do when you see them standing there.
Yeah.
And Burr's like, oh yeah. I mean, we've been friends forever. Like it's going to be.
And he hates Jefferson.
Who's it going to be?
It's going to be.
I think so. One of the ways this show is accessible before it ever went to Disney Plus is that it was literally the first show to make casting rules that you have to cast POC actors in certain roles, in all the roles, basically.
All the roles except for British soldiers, the crier guy.
Yeah, King George.
And then King George, I think.
It's not the first show. There are other shows.
But are there other shows where you are, where it's not a show about race?
That is the key, yes.
See, that's the thing. I'm sure there's lots of shows where it's like, no, this is a show about being black.
Yeah, but I'm like sitting there going, I'm pretty sure the color purple has some pretty strong rules.
Hairspray. Sure, Hairspray. But that's a very different thing. And honestly, I've seen high schools or heard of high schools putting on Hairspray with no black people.
The Hairspray casting rules is a fairly recent thing.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So like that is one of the first ways that it was accessible to a new, not even a new, but to a group of people and actors and audiences, honestly, that had been woefully underrepresented in Broadway and who had been not just in the, on the stage, but also in the audience. Because why would you go see a show of just a bunch of old fucking dumb white people singing about white people stuff, you know, if it didn't appeal to you on a personal level in any way? And this really did. This is, you know, like it's Lin-Manuel built himself up from nothing. Yeah. Like he is a scrappy motherfucker, right? Like,
I know. It's there's nuance. I think Hamilton mixtape too added to that, and that was some songs that got cut from the original version, some remixes of songs that are in it, and a few songs that are kind of inspired by and sample songs from Hamilton. I think that kind of covers what mixtape is.
Well, I mean, the problem with Broadway is accessibility. The problem with theater, because like Teddy is about to start middle school this fall, and it was a whole thing of us trying to find a middle school for her because she wanted arts. And there's an arts magnet that she did get into, and then there's an academic magnet. And can you guess, based on just those words, the racial majority of the arts magnet? And the academic magnet.
Yeah.
The academic magnet is, by the way, in a traditionally black neighborhood with a traditionally black school. And they've built an academic magnet there in order to make that school better and more successful. So Teddy wanted to go to the arts magnet. And I was like, yeah, they've got a theater program in middle school, which is amazing. And I'm looking at all of the pictures of the theater productions, and the only faces I'm seeing are white. So I'm not down with that. It was one of the frustrating things when I was teaching and I had a theater licensure and I wanted a theater job. Well, of course, theater jobs were being cut. And where there were theater jobs, they were overwhelmingly in white schools, or most egregiously, there was a theater teacher at St. Paul School on the east side, St. Paul High School, predominantly like 90% African American population. Mm-hmm. They had a theater program and there were no black kids involved. Mm. Like the minority population of white kids was 100% of the theater kids. And I'm like, and they're doing shows at a school that had like a large Hmong and a large African American, and they're doing shows like I Went to Graceland with Elvis.
Oh boy.
Yikes.
Yeah, that was, I went to Minneapolis Public School that had the International Baccalaureate Magnet, which is an academic magnet. And the school is very segregated in that the majority of the IB magnet was white kids. And it was in Southwest Minneapolis, which is probably a more affluent part of Minneapolis. I was the only white kid on my bus because they took kids from the poorer neighborhood into Southwest to racially diversify the school. It just happened that I lived in a neighborhood where I was the white kid on the bus. And I got into theater and stuff, and it was, you know, mostly white kids for sure, even though the school was not mostly white kids at all. We had a lot of Somali kids, a very big Hmong and Vietnamese population too. But I mean, that was my intro to theater. That was like doing Anything Goes and Odd Couple and stuff like that. Like I went and saw Rent in 97 because I was able to get Rush tickets because we were able to show up and you know, at the door at the crack of dawn and wait for them to open and get in line. And we managed to do it. But it was the only way we would have been able to do it because we were broke.
Yeah. And I mean, Broadway still has that, but you couldn't get tickets to Hamilton because Scout.
Oh, no. And well, people got really mad because it was like, I have money and I will pay it. And it's like, too bad.
Well, so that isn't always the case, though, with Rush tickets, because So I worked at the Hennepin Theater Trust for a while when I was going back to school, and they are a Broadway Across America touring theater, the Orpheum in Minneapolis. And they only mostly do rush tickets for students and teachers.
Yeah.
And that's it. So if you're an adult and you're not an educator, you're SOL. That's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
That's,
so poor people, fuck you.
Yeah.
And art is so powerful. Like, it's one of the reasons why I am, of course, somebody who strongly hates pirating shit. Right. Of course I do. I am in the arts community. I have too many friends who are artists, and I know people need that fucking money. And mm-hmm. yet I will collect bootlegs of Broadway shows because there's no way I'm ever going to see that show because I'm not taking any money from somebody's pocket watching that bootleg. I was not going to get to see that show anyway. And I've never understood why Broadway hasn't been recording these shows. There's a whole bootleg community because it's the only way that you can see Idina Menzel in okay. Aida.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Right. Where you get to see some of your favorite performers step into other roles than the ones that you know them from.
Yeah.
Like to see Taye Diggs play Fiero in Wicked opposite his wife at the time,
mm-hmm.
Idina Menzel. I would fucking kill to see that. Why doesn't Broadway record these things and make them accessible? And the idea that somehow having Hamilton on Disney Plus would impact their sales, let's be fucking honest. How many more people now want to go see it live?
Yeah.
100%. My favorite musical, and I love Hamilton. Don't get me wrong. Hamilton's awesome. My favorite musical is Les Miserables. It's always going to be Les Miserables. That's the way it is. Suffer. But the only way I can see it is if the show comes to town, which is not doing very much anymore, or that fucking movie, which is a piece of shit.
Oh my God, that movie is. Jesus. And that's the other thing that drives me crazy as an artist is these musicals became famous for a reason, right? There's a reason somebody wanted to make a film. And the problem is so often the film fucks up what the stage version did well. It doesn't adapt. Or the people who are making the film don't understand how musicals work. Right? Because you gotta understand there's particular structure and beats to it.
And they used to fucking know how to do it, right? They used to know how to make a stage musical into a movie. And yes, mm-hmm. yes, Nick. Yes.
I would highly recommend on this topic, Lindsay Ellis, who's a former guest of honor at Convergence, mm-hmm. has a video called Why Is Cats?
That's right.
And it's like an hour long, and it's about like the recent history of Broadway musicals, being adapted to movies. Who's been working on those, producing those, how much money they've made, what kind of awards they've won, and why that all inevitably led to the colossal failure that was Cats. And that it was totally inevitable, like it was going to happen. But a big thing she talks about in the video is how there is a level of willing to be able to like ignore how absurd a musical is, especially when it's on stage. But that same level of surrealism, which a musical is a fucking surreal experience. People don't do that. That kind of a surreal experience isn't the kind of realism that people are accustomed to in movies now. So when they're going to adapt a stage musical to a movie, they're going to do it as something serious. They're going to do it as something that's like a gritty movie. Rent.
Oh my God.
They're going to fucking Dark Knight that shit.
Yeah, I would say too, like, I've never seen Camelot staged, but I've seen the movie. I loved the movie as a kid, and I thought it was a really excellent, you know, movie. But, I don't know if anyone's ever seen it staged, if that was a good version or not, you know, like, I don't know.
Well, but Number one, yes, it is. But also that it was made at a time where directors still knew what to do.
Right. Yeah. But also there wasn't
crowds were willing to buy into a film musical.
Like a movie would run for months, not weekends. Like a movie, no matter how bad it was, would run for months because there just weren't that many movies. So like right now, I feel like there's such a constant fight for an audience's attention that it's hard to be a filmmaker right now. And especially if you're adapting something that's, fucking 2.5 hours long, and you got to try to make it under 2 hours so an audience won't get bored, but also it's got to be cool, and it's also got to tell the whole story and make sure that it has all the good songs. Like
which is why, looping back to Wendy's point, the big issue here is they aren't filming these musicals. I mean, and the fact that they aren't preserving the original cast of
and the choreography of every
Broadway show that they do. The fact that that's not being done is ridiculous, and they would make more money. It's like they don't even understand. It's like if you had a DVD of Les Miserables available at every performance of Les Miserables, a significant percentage of your audience is going to walk out with the DVD, and it's not going to hurt your CD sales because they're probably going to buy one of those too.
Yeah, with Rent, the choreography, I saw original Broadway cast of Rent. I saw it basically 4 months after it opened, just accidentally. We just decided to go. We were young, and the travel agent who signed us up for the Broadway tickets in our package was like, there's this new musical for young people, and you're young. I think you'll love it. And it turned out we did. So it was great. But the choreography I remember from that is different from what I've seen in touring shows. Like, it's not quite the same because the edges have softened over time. It was a landmark. It was a revelation in 1996, but now we're all really familiar with a lot of this stuff. So it's not as big a deal, and it's softened.
That shit gets lost. Yeah. Like, people will never get to see that. It's lost. There's no archive of that shit for public consumption. And I mean, this isn't an original thought by any means, but like, ultimately, piracy is the result of a failure to produce content to people in an acceptable way.
And to make it accessible.
Right. Yep. And so if you don't make Broadway available and people can't buy tickets because of secondhand sellers that show up the day tickets go on sale and they're the first in line and they have their five people with them that they've each given a stack of cash to buy tickets so that they can all resell them. That is what happens, by the way, as working a box office person, that's 100% what happens. There's this artificial scarcity that gets set up, and people are going to fucking bootleg musicals because you're failing to provide that substantially.
But also, you'll hear constantly about Broadway bemoaning, like, nobody, the audience for new musicals, like, that's why we keep doing revivals, blah blah blah. And it's like, well, are you trying to grow your audience? Number one, the ticket prices are insane.
Oh my god.
So if you offered other ways to make money, you wouldn't have to raise your ticket prices so high to cover the costs of that show. If you had a DVD for sale right there, if you could put it online and start getting that revenue, plus everybody watching that online is getting to love Broadway and be like, I want to go see a show on Broadway someday. And this becomes something that more people are like, that's a bucket list item. I want to see a Broadway show.
There are movies that I own that I can watch for free on cable or HBO or whatever anytime that I would still love to see in the theater. They're like, and I will jump at the chance to do so with friends as like a midnight movie. I mean, like, not right now, obviously.
Right. But, at some point.
In a normal part of history.
I will always go see Xanadu and Singing in the Rain.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, I think about things like, my first experience with Into the Woods was on video.
Yes, film of the stage show.
And it's fantastic.
My first experience
with Sweeney Todd was a film of the stage show.
My first experience with Into the Woods was being in it in high school, which is not recommended. Not recommended.
Okay. So we got it. We're all over the place. We got to get to five questions. I got to steer it back to Hamilton for just a second, because we did not nerd out about Hamilton enough. But I want to give everybody an opportunity, if you want to do one Hamilton thing before we go on to five questions.
What, like cheat on my wife and tell everybody? Or like,
yeah.
Ignore my family.
Okay. Quick, Hamilton.
Kill my parents? What's happening here?
Here's my super quick.
No, I was embezzling. I wasn't embezzling. I was cheating on my wife. Like, flex.
Don't tell anyone. You know what?
Here's a super quick question. Favorite song from the musical. Only one. You don't get to go, this one. Favorite song from the musical. I'm bringing this up because my kids, who had never seen Hamilton, I showed it to them this weekend. And yesterday, they were watching the show through in the order that they liked the songs.
Wow.
It was awesome. Anyway, okay, so favorite song. Wendy, you've been a Hamill fan the longest. You get to go first. What's your favorite song?
And it was because when I saw it on Broadway, it reconfigured my understanding of the show. I thought Leslie Odom Jr. was good, but live, that man is captivating. I went to see David Diggs, just like Nick. I was like, I want to see David Diggs. And I walked out going, Leslie Odom Jr., dang it.
Yeah.
Room Where It Happens.
Okay.
Holy shit. Because everybody's like, wait for it. And I was like, wait for it. Room Where It Happens is a fucking showstopper when that man does that. Mm. God damn. It blew the roof off the joint.
Yeah.
My favorite is What Did I Miss?
Yeah.
Because it's such a great, I love it for, not only is it a great song, not only is it is a great act opener. It's a great fucking act opener. And it's a great song to come back to after an intermission.
Yeah.
What Did I Miss? Like, it's such a great, there's so many funny fucking lines in there. And just the
good introduction
to the character, yeah. The like, you know,
switching tone,
the whole thing that I've heard about how Lin-Manuel wrote the music for Jefferson to be a little different. Like, he gets ragtimey kind of feels because he's
out of touch
with everybody else. So he has a different style. Yeah. I fucking love that song.
It's also a good introduction because everyone is double cast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you saw this guy, but now, hey, look, it's Thomas Jefferson, everybody. Yep. And so it has a mechanical quality.
I was gonna pick the one.
You never would pick up that Oak plays Madison. I never knew that Mulligan was Madison until I saw the show, and I'm like, the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. I knew that, and that I there are some lines in the opening that give me chills because of it. But that's yeah.
So there's two things that I like absolutely love to watch on YouTube and fall down like video watching holes, and that's breakdancing videos and rap battles, like underground rap battles, bracketed rap battles. And so the moment in Hamilton when I was like, oh fuck, this is really
good. Ladies and gentlemen,
cabinet battle number one, because not only does it set up the whole cabinet debate as a rap battle, which is so much cooler to see than hear, and it's awesome to hear, but like there are so many little references and jokes in there that are old rap battle fucking jokes. They're old rap battle, like not just the mic drop and shit like that, but there are a lot of things where it's like, that was a reference. I don't know how many people got that, but that wasn't a historical reference. That was like a fucking rap battle joke. Like, I was thrilled by that.
Can't confirm. Yeah.
So for me, it's also The Room Where It Happens. I just think that that song is fucking baller. I do have to say that when we showed this show to my mom, we were talking about it afterwards, and we're like, you know, and there were like three different actors were up for Best Actor Tonys, and she's like, and which one do you think won? She's like, well, it was Burr, wasn't it? We're like, yeah. I mean, yeah.
When you see the show, you're like, Leslie Odom. Of course, David won Best Supporting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no one gives the guy playing Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar an award. They give it to Judas.
Yeah.
He's the more interesting.
But he fucking nails it. And that's the song. Yeah. Okay. So So anyway,
I will say it's sad. They show it on the screen that when he hops and they pull the tablecloth away and, and the table is mirrored live. That was a jump gasp of, shit, that's cool.
That was great.
The one thing I will say about Hamilton on Disney Plus is Lin-Manuel Miranda pointed out that they wanted to keep their PG-13 rating so they could only have one fuck. They kept the stupidest one.
They kept
the one where he doesn't even say fuck. He just says fa. And like, they needed to keep Hercules Mulligan fuck. That is the best fucking show.
Yes.
Southern Democratic fucking Republicans has the best.
The beat, the cadence.
Yeah.
But just Southern motherfucking Democratic Republicans.
Yeah.
And muting it like they did breaks the flow.
Yeah.
When you knock me down, I get the fuck back up again.
But they did get all the shit. So
there was a lot of
get
shit.
They got a ton of shit. So
I feel like
all right,
more shits than on the recording.
So all right, Winnie, you have not been on our podcast since we have our new five questions, which aren't that new, but I guess it's just been a while since we've had you on the podcast. Hey, good thing we got the pandemic, so nobody's doing anything anymore.
What are you talking about? We're watching Hamilton.
And that is all we're doing.
That is all we're doing. We're just watching Hamilton. All right. So we got five questions. We are going to start with Molly. Molly, question number one for Wendy.
Question number one. What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
The fucking Mandela effect, specifically the Berenstain Bears.
Oh, sure. What's the conspiracy theory about it?
That everybody remembers it was Berenstain Bears when they were a kid, but it was Berenstain. But now it's spelled Berenstain. Why did they decide to change it? No, it was always Berenstain. I am also in this camp of, I remember it being Berenstain.
Same. I remember it being that way, but
I remember my parents pronouncing it Berenstain.
Yeah.
So what? Like, and I'm like, proof of an alternate universe. Sure,
I'm in the opposite. I must be from the other universe because I know for a fact it's the Berenstain Bears. Because it sounds like bear. Berenstain Bear. It all fits together.
Uh-huh. All right. Well,
shove your ass.
That is a
up
fascinating
ass
conspiracy theory. Nick, question number two.
Question number two is, what's your perfect 2-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
Okay, so when you talk about physics, my question was, do I have to be concerned about my personal safety? If money is no object, I can have...
Yeah. It's more like you can't get to the moon in an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
No teleporting.
Teleporting. Like, time still happens. You don't have a time turner.
Okay, I would go see all the places I've ever wanted to see. So that would be Giza and Petra and Kilimanjaro and Istanbul and all of these places that even if I did have enough money, I don't have enough money for private security.
Because, and private jets. Yeah. You would need
like,
a Learjet.
I'd want like private jets. I'd want to go to Tokyo and see Mount Fuji, and the Great Wall and, Angkor Wat, and of course I want to take Budapest and then some time through all the Balkans. So yeah, I'd need a private jet so I could get to all those places.
A fast one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would also, I'd have to make some hard choices. I acknowledge that.
Yeah, you can
but
get
I would
to
also need private security because Istanbul isn't safe.
It's not Constantinople, I'll tell you that much.
And Giza in Egypt isn't necessarily safe, like especially for a short blonde woman like I stand motherfucking stand out too.
Plus there's that tricky Sphinx.
Yeah.
You could get trapped if he asks you the wrong riddle.
Oh, that would be worse.
And I'd want to climb to the top of the Giza. I'd be like, nope, I get to climb up there. I don't care how much I have to pay.
Yeah, you got a lot of money. You can make it work. Yeah.
I'd be like, I'll do it first thing in the morning. I would, however, need somebody to help me because, as we know, I'm terrified of heights. So climbing up there would be terrifying. I'd need a little help. Maybe they could just fly me up.
But you could pay somebody.
Just a boost.
We'll just buy you some hover boots.
There we go.
Oh, there you go.
Physics.
Oh, fuck.
Money.
All right.
Money.
Question number three.
Money.
What is a movie or a book that changed your life, and how or why?
Or a book. I'm going to go with a book because...
God damn it! I thought Wendy for sure would be somebody that would use a, that would pick a movie. God damn.
Sorry, the movies don't really change my life. They just affirm the life I already chose.
Whatever. All right, what book is it? Go, go. It's your time.
Illusions by Richard Bach, because he has a quote in there, we are the otters of the universe. And that hit me at just the right time to be like, you're right. No matter what else I want in life, no matter whatever else ambitions, if I'm not having fun, I have fucked it up.
So, plus like all the rape.
What?
Otters.
God damn it. They do. God damn it. Why are you going to be like that? God. But also.
That's how he gets his otter fun.
Kyle was the Navy, and he had to do like sea rescue training. And he said that otters are psychotic torpedoes. When they realize there's a person in the water, they're like, ooh, something fun to play with. And they, of course, go very fast. And then they just try to hit you as hard as they can for fun.
I've had ferrets, so that makes sense.
Yeah, that fits.
And since, you know, I love otters, I'm kind of like, yeah, that kind of fits my personality.
All right, question four. Question four. What's the geekiest thing you've ever done?
Ever done?
The geekiest thing you've ever done.
You specifically, Wendy.
While you're thinking on it, I think psychotic torpedo describes your convergence style.
Yeah, that's true. It does. Very much so.
Stay on target. I mean, we've already mentioned that I built an entire revolutionary colonial costume.
Right, but I know for a fact that's not the geekiest thing you've ever done.
That's like not even top 10.
No. That's borderline historical.
I was unemployed with no money. I had just bought a house, and yet I used frequent flyer miles to fly to a 24-hour film festival, because why the fuck not?
That fits. Yep.
And it did change my life. Now, the geekiest thing I've ever said was when I ran into Bruce Greenwood and I said to him, I loved you in The Core.
I don't get that.
His head went terrible. The Core. And I was like, yup.
The fuck you say.
The Core is awesome.
It's I saw The Core with my friend who is now gone from this earth, but he was a geologist and he was not a fan of the movie.
Why it's so great. It's so but what a fucking cast makes, and they're all in it. They're like, yeah, I'm gonna deliver these lines.
Yep. I'm gonna do this stupid movie.
They chew that scenery despite it being made of rocks.
Stanley Tucci. Yeah.
Nick, question number five.
Question number five, speaking of convergence. Hey, Wendy, what's your favorite hangover cure?
Pooping.
Just like a good shit?
Like the next day, the key to recovering from a hangover is before you go to bed, yes, drink some water, but eat something so that when you wake up in the morning, you can poop, and then that helps flush some of that alcohol out.
Just shit the hangover right out.
Preferably
take it up.
By the time you wake up, it's far too down in the system. So you take
your metabolism's faster than some people I know, I think.
Take the glass of water into the toilet with you, and then you just sort of sit there going, oh God, this is awful. Drink water, shit.
Little, she gets right in the toilet.
Well, yeah, Wendy's metabolism is faster than a lot of people I know. So that does make a certain amount of sense.
Would you say it makes a shit ton of sense?
Oh!
I'm just nonstop.
Y'all need to try pooping.
Thank you, Disney, for all the shit. Thank you.
Like, honestly, Lin-Manuel Hamilton specifically. There were so many memes when it came out of people being like, I got to write this paper. It's finals time. I don't know if I can do it. And then like, Hamilton wrote the other 51. You write it, can do it.
With a pen and quill, like a fucking dipping it in the ink, scratching it on parchment. Like it's made of skin. By candlelight. Yeah. You can write on a computer. Boo, 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 boo.
It's nonstop. You're right, Hamilton. I can do it. Thank you for believing.
So it's on Disney Plus. If you don't have a Disney Plus yourself, you can. It's not that expensive. Like 1 month of Disney Plus is like $12.99 or some shit like that. Right?
It's also worth noting it's cheaper than that. Under $10. Yeah. But it's also worth noting that one Disney Plus account can stream on up to 6 devices at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, since I've had Disney Plus for a while, if you just got it for a month for Hamilton
and the Mandalorian,
then you could watch the Mandalorian, and then you could watch Prop Culture, which we've also discussed on here.
Also, Into the Unknown is a great docuseries about the making of Frozen 2, which even if you don't love the movie, it is a fascinating look behind the scenes of how an animated film gets made.
And there's also a series on their National Geographic channel called Drain the Ocean, which is hilarious because the announcer is super serious and it's like he's narrating an ancient aliens thing, but it's about draining the ocean. It's hilarious. It's so good. Anyway, my point is Disney Plus, 1 month, super cheap. You should watch Hamilton. It is one of the most accessible ways to see a Broadway show right now.
I hope that eventually, since it was meant to be released in theaters, like I hope there are some film like special events where I can see. I would love to see it on the big screen with huge sound. I think that'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. And I wish Broadway would do more Fathom events. Like, you know what? Yes, I will pay $30 to see. Like, they keep doing operas, which is great, but, like, do some fucking Broadway.
I would have killed to see some of the shows.
That's how we saw, what's her, lady.
Oh, Fleabag.
We saw her final performance of Fleabag they recorded, and we got to see that as a Fathom event, which is dope. But because they only do them very limited and they are fairly expensive, it's still, like, an artificial scarcity. Keeping it scarce so they can keep the price high.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, why?
In the end, they hurt themselves.
More like white. Yeah. Well,
and, I mean, you could say it's economics, but I do also think yes, there is definitely a part of it of no, but we want this to be exclusive.
Broadway's so white. Right.
Mm-hmm. Like no. We don't want the hoi polloi to come in and pollute our fun.
My best friend and I were talking today and she said, it's funny because, all of the think pieces and people's posts I've seen criticizing Hamilton for, you know, all of its failings have been from white people. And all of my friends who are, POC are all talking about how fucking great it is. And she's like, I think that it's interesting that the people who are tearing it down at this point already are like, but is it good enough? You know, like,
it's not honest about what they were. It's like,
I've seen a few POC critical of it, but not like this show should go away. They're like, you got to recognize there's some issues with these people. And it's like, yeah.
But at the same time, and I am going to say this because I've really been thinking about it since I saw the whole, like, it's a show that celebrates slavers. And I'm like, no, because Lin-Manuel Miranda stated his thesis the first time he ever performed the title song for Obama at that one dinner, which is, I want to tell a story about a man who embodies the spirit of hip hop, Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton. Yeah. And everybody fucking laughed. But when he read the biography, he saw a person whose life was exactly like the hip hop star, somebody who comes from nothing, works his way up. And because he's so damaged, he keeps fucking his own life up because he's so fucked up. And so the genius of the story is that he's telling this mythology that is so white, and he's recasting it as a story from a modern lens of immigration, putting immigrants in those roles, recasting the founding fathers as immigrants, which they fucking were.
Now, telling the story of America then with America now is how I heard it. And that is the perfect, like, yes. Yes.
He never wanted to make a story, a musical that condemned slavery, because number one, nobody would go see that fucking show. But number two, that wasn't the musical he was telling. And if that's the musical you want, if you want a musical about the founding fathers that really gets into the dichotomy and the paradox of who they were, great, write that fucking musical. But that's not what Lin-Manuel wrote. Yep. And don't criticize his show for not doing something it was never going to do.
And with that, we will thank you for listening to this podcast. Join us for the next podcast when we take that subject and explode it into another hour. We'll just bring Wendy back for that in another, what is it, 5 years? Anyway, thanks for being with us, Wendy. So good to see you. I realize our audience hasn't seen you, but so good to hear you. We are going to do more podcasts like this every week. It's what we do because we have no life. So thanks for joining us for Geeks Without God. Remember, if you donate money on Patreon, you could have watched the video of this episode early. And I got to tell you, this is probably the most interesting video we've ever done, because Wendy cannot sit still. It is impossible for her to do that.
And you don't want to wait for it. You want to get right on that.
Also, I've got virtual backgrounds. There we go. Look at that. Hey.
I also have a virtual background. You can't see it because it's not real.
Because it's virtual. All right. We're done. We don't know how to end this fucking show. We're ending the show. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Bye. Until this pandemic is over, none of us are ever going to be in the room where it happens.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. Authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Well, when the fuck is a new Marvel movie going to come out?